Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, we've got Pernell, Chris, and Aki. How are you three doing?
Good.
Doing all right. Dragon.
Dragon.
What the hell was that noise, Pernell?
That's me revving up the engine because I'm running on fumes today. But I wanted to muster up.
Same.
Oh, yeah. I got like 4 hours of sleep last night.
Damn.
And then worked the full shift and did some house stuff, and now I am online eating pizza for dinner because I came from Chicago. So, of course, I'm eating a grocery store pizza for dinner.
Those are great.
What were you doing in Chicago? Tell us about your trip. How was your weekend?
Well, it was good. I went there because a friend was having a housewarming party, so I flew out there for that. Of course, the trip started badly because my car overheated on the way to the airport.
No.
So I had to deal with that on the way back. Fortunately, it's something small, and it wasn't a repeat of what happened a few years ago when my engine blew out. So it's a $600 repair instead of a $4,000 repair. So
jeez.
I hate it, but I'll live. But I dropped the car off at the parking lot, and it's all overheated glory, and went to Chicago. I've been going there a lot over the years to visit friends, so I'm not much of a tourist at this point. So I genuinely spent much of the time with friends at different board game cafes, playing board games, and touring the various neighborhoods that those board game cafes are in. And I got to have some good Szechuan food while I was there. I always love getting that. And unfortunately, my neck of the woods is doesn't have a lot of that in it. So whenever I'm out and about, I get what I can get. So although I had a really good time, but then I got back into the area, plane landed after 1 o'clock, and then I had to wait for a tow truck till like 2:30. Tow truck came, ran the car back home. I had to pay $60 for an overage charge over my roadside assistance. Then I got home, went to bed at 4 o'clock. So, but it was a good time. Overall, I enjoyed the trip. I just wish I wasn't coming back to bullshit. So,
that's fair.
I'm managing. The important part is I'm managing, so I can't complain. I'm able to deal with it. That's the important part.
Yeah. And did you have a good time out there while you were there?
Oh, absolutely. It was a nice breath of fresh air.
That's what's important.
Oh, yeah. That's you're never in a situation where you laugh until you cry?
Yes.
Those are rare, and when I get them, I love them. I had multiple.
I had them this past weekend myself.
Yeah, I heard you went down to Big Adams.
Yeah, I went to Big Adams. It was his birthday, and there was a wrestling pay-per-view the same day, AEW's All In pay-per-view from London. And it started at 1 o'clock, and we thought, hey, last year when it was announced it was happening on his birthday, he was like, I'm gonna throw a party and you guys are invited. So I went down with Ashley. Tim flew down so he could go. Some other of Adam's friends that are in the Discord, Dave K, that comes on here, he was there. And we just
he's hilarious by himself.
Yeah, we just hung out and watched wrestling and watched some crazy videos. And it actually led to a new sound on our soundboard from there's a guy named Bob Rose. He does videos.
I love Bob.
He sells shirts. Actually, that Sonic the Log shirt I have is from him. And
I have like five of his shirts.
His shirts are amazing.
Yeah. And also, he has a great podcast about screenwriting, which I don't write movies, but even if you don't, it's great to hear them talked about in like a clinical way. But Writers and Blockbusters is his podcast. You should listen to it.
I will have to check that out. But in one of his videos, the one guy who was at the party, Matt, he was playing a character who wanted people to be more intimate. So we have this sound clip now.
Why aren't you fucking?
Yeah. Oh, that's Matt PA.
Yes.
Yeah.
Matt PA.
I love that guy too. He's great.
That'll be exclusively for Aki games.
Yes.
Also, some of Brooks. She does those Ultimate games too.
Yeah, it was a pretty good weekend. I had a great time. I needed it. It was good to interact with humanity again. Yeah, I had a good time. Chris, how was your weekend?
It was just moving. That's all it was. That's all it will ever be.
Forever?
Yeah. No, we're completely out of the house now. Although we got more stuff to do tonight after this podcast, in fact. But yeah, that's all it is. I have not really even, I've barely unpacked over at the new place, but it's cool. The new place is nice. So it's like one of the first times I'm getting to, you know, put my head above water for a second.
Oh, hey, Brooke's here.
You can't.
What up?
Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
No, hi.
Hey, Brooke.
Hey, Aki. I thought you were here. Are you ready to tag team that game with me next week?
Yes. Not currently okay. Ready, but I will be by then, I promise.
I'm not ready either. Yeah, it's okay. Okay, sorry. As you were, I will just be here.
Oh, no, we were just talking about our weekends. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Just chilled. I ate the new Cookie Crisp by Crumble Cookies. It was all right.
Oh, you threw me off for a second. I thought you were saying it was a new Cookie Crisp cereal.
It sort of is like adult Cookie Crisp. Hold up, I'll send y'all a picture in the chat real quick. I'm calling it Poser Cookie Crisp. And then I got regular Cookie Crisp, and I compared them, and I do like regular more. But if you're going to eat them dry, I like the new one more.
Mm-hmm. Cookie Crisp. Chip the dog and Cookie Crook.
Isn't what Cookie was Crisp just tiny chocolate chip cookies?
Oh yeah,
so good too. They're freaking delicious.
They're a little too good.
I think that was one of the first instances of my childhood where I was like, "This isn't breakfast. This is just candy. Or this is just sugary treats. This isn't breakfast at all." I'm okay with this though, because goddamn, those things are good.
What's everybody's favorite sugary cereal?
Oh god, that's a tough question.
What was like your favorite growing up? Like, did you like Smacks?
Well, growing up, I didn't eat cereal growing up. Charms because I wanted the marshmallows, and my dad would never buy them. So, any chance I had access to them was like a freaking field day.
Yeah, I love Lucky Charm.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch for me, I think.
Hell yeah, on the Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I made like Rice Krispie treats with the Cinnamon Toast Crunch ones. It was so freaking good.
Nice.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch is a good standby. I go through phases though, like. Sometimes I want Lucky Charms, sometimes I want Honeycomb, sometimes I want like Fruit Loops with marshmallows. Those are really good. If I had to pick one standby that I always go to, Golden Grahams.
Yeah, that's a great
one. Ooh, I love Golden Grahams.
Cannot it's like, how do they Graham be a all store of it? Brand because the store brands never get the flavor right.
No.
I will say, there are some exceptions. Croco Crunch is better than Captain Crunch.
Oh, there's definitely some exceptions. I mean with Golden Grahams.
Never had
that. There are no copycat Golden Grahams that taste like Golden Grahams.
Yeah. Oh, that I get, yeah. Hold up. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's funny because you'd think Golden Grahams already being a derivative of another food, like somebody else could have stolen that recipe, but nope, guess not.
Timber says Fruit Loops is number one. Anyone else who disagrees is wrong.
I like Fruit Loops a lot.
If Fruit Loops is wrong as the favorite, I don't want to be right. No, I love Fruit Loops. It's just specifically the favorite. But I think that the easier question, though, I'm going to be proved wrong real quick. What is your least favorite sugary cereal?
Ooh, that's tough. When I was a kid, it was Fruity Pebbles, but now I like them. I didn't like the fruit cereals when I was a kid, but now they make me nostalgic when, like, trendy donut shops put it on a donut. I eat that shit up.
See, I'll take the fact that we agreed as kids, at least, because for me, the answer is definitely Fruity Pebbles. But not because of the taste. They taste great.
It's because they get soggy in, like, a minute and a half.
The film or the sog?
It's the sog.
Man.
See, I thought that cereal gave me a film on the top of my mouth, so I didn't like it. So I was having a weird texture thing with it. But now I don't care.
I have a love-hate relationship with Captain Crunch because it's amazing, but like the roof of my mouth dies.
It's violent.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say Alphabets.
Oh, I actually like Alphabets.
Yeah, they're all right. It's just, what are they don't live up to the hype. Frosted Flakes aren't already bringing. You know what, though?
They don't sog as quickly.
Learning.
Though. Well, I don't eat my cereal with milk, cereal. So cereal is just candy to me.
No.
So it's like, it doesn't really matter on that front, but I don't know. Because I want to also give it to Frosted Mini Wheats, because how dare you waste sugar like that?
Now, see, the funny thing about Frosted Mini Wheats, I'm in Brooke's position with that. As a kid, I thought Mini Wheats and Frosted Mini Wheats were ridiculous, but now Frosted Mini Wheats are pretty much potato chips for me. Like, I will eat bags of that stuff. It's so fucking good.
I think I remember. It's, okay, No. I remember now. It goes by different names depending on the brand, but the little tiny cinnamon roll cereals. So Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch had a rolls, and Cinnabon had a cereal.
Yeah, I saw the Cinnabon
and
ones.
They're stiff and crunchy and like not very pleasant to eat, and they just taste like cinnamon. So like we've already got, and Cinnamon Roll Crunch is another one, but those aren't shaped like cinnamon rolls.
No, I do that.
The cereal, specifically the cereal that's shaped like cinnamon rolls.
I've seen that cereal, but I'm forgetting what it was called. And then they eventually got the actual marketing branding of Cinnabon, like you said, but it didn't have a name before that.
Yeah, they did, and I'm trying to remember what that was. It was like, because I know they had the, because also, yeah, like Cinnamon Toast Crunch did a version of it, which I haven't even tried, but it looks like it's the exact same thing. Let's see if I can find it.
We're all like Googling this right now.
It was just called Kellogg's Cinnamon Mini Buns.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, look them up. And yeah, they're just these unpleasant spirals of just like crunchy, like corn cereal with like some cinnamon sprinkled on. And like, I don't know, man. Those are unpleasant to eat. I'll take Alphabets over those for sure.
Yeah, those don't sound pleasant.
And Frosted Mini Wheats, I mean, damn, I do love that frosting though.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I've never had the
Frosted Mini Wheats where they started flavoring them, because that was one thing they changed since we were kids. They started making like strawberry Frosted Mini Wheats, and
that's right. No, I didn't.
Yeah,
those are what you want.
Those are pretty good, actually. Yeah, those are better. At least I'll say.
I'm gonna give a shout out to Honey Kicks.
Honey Kicks. Good shout out.
I don't remember Honey Kicks. Just berry
just. Berry Kicks is another good one. They're more healthy, so they're not like super sweet, but they have just enough of a taste to be good and like not as super sugary as everything else. I've always enjoyed Honey Kicks.
I always like just regular old Kicks.
Because you're weird.
Maybe I got bought in by the branding. Also, that
I like
that,
the berry.
Three says bring back Smurf Berry Crunch. Hell yeah,
that shit was good.
Oh, man.
I don't care if it made people shit purple. It was delicious.
Oh, my God. I didn't know.
That's why they dropped it.
Amazing. I'm learning now that, like, they also, that cinnamon bun cereal that's no good also went by Mini Swirls by Kellogg's. I guess they had a little swirl in them. And then, I guess, Host did a version based on Hostess's Honey Buns, which I have not tried. But apparently that was one thing that happened. Because I liked Honey Buns, but not as a cereal.
I used to love Kellogg's S'mores, and I wish they would bring that back.
Oh, yeah, those were very nice.
I never heard of those. I didn't try those.
Like a big box. I believe they sell S'mores Crunch now, which is like a derivative of Golden Grahams.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about, maybe, because it's just like the Golden Grahams plus the marshmallow bits plus like chocolate balls or something.
Yeah, I don't think that's as good as S'mores cereal was. It was S-M-O-R-Z because that's cooler.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Now I gotta look at this other version.
Chocolate puff cereal. and marshmallows with like a graham swirl and coating on it. Oh, they were just so good.
Anybody remember Hidden Treasures?
No.
They were little squares and of like, and some of them had like the little fruit filling in them, like some cereals do, which is pretty tasty. They had a weird taste to me, but I actually liked them quite a lot. And their mascot was a little robot boy with his backwards robot baseball cap. They're from General Mills. Look them up, Hidden Treasures. I think they kind of reformulated that to make some kind of like mini Pop-Tart cereal or something like that. But Hidden Treasures was I think it was a 90s thing.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking them up. I've had like a Nutella knockoff version of this by a different grocery store. I think that's where it came from. These look like little Totino's pizza rolls.
Yeah, this like little healthy. Totino's pizza rolls, except that like some of them didn't have the filling in them, so you just kind of had to be like, yeah, they didn't fill each and every one, so that's why they were hidden treasures. Yeah,
just like Totino's pizza rolls.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you get a little chunk of pepperoni, sometimes you don't. Most times you don't.
I love Totino's.
Most of the time it's just lava cheese.
Exactly. But I thought Hidden Treasures, like, again, they had a weird taste. Like, I can still recall it, but I can't describe it because it doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I mean, just a fruity corn cereal. I mean, that's all it is.
I'm so sad I don't have the nostalgia you guys do about fucking cereal.
Me too.
What a major foods do you like, Aki? What old foods do you miss?
I don't really have any.
You just want Rally's fries, don't you?
Yeah, I could live off of that bitch.
Me too.
Wouldn't Rally's fries count? They were around when you were a kid.
You could just put them in a bowl with some milk.
Yeah.
And that's your cereal right there.
No.
It's corn and it's not good for you. Like, that's the same. The same science is there.
No. You should be hit for that. No. Ruining perfectly good Rally's fries. The fuck is wrong with you? As an adult,
there's a lot wrong with a lot of us.
Yeah, as an adult, my favorite cereal is probably that Special K that has the strawberry slices in it.
Yeah, I love those. I had some of those recently. I like the wholesome cereals. Like, I like the sugary ones, but I like the wholesome ones. Have y'all had Cracklin' Oat Bran?
Yes.
Cracklin' Oat Bran. Oh my god, I'd never heard of it until recently. So actually my friend Liz, shout out to Liz if she ever listens to this, was like, you would like this cereal, it looks like dog food. So I was like, I gotta try it. And then I couldn't find it. I was like tweeting about this too. I was like, I couldn't find it for like 2 weeks because it was sold out my Safeway. I finally tried it and I love it. Oh my god. Follow-up
question to that. Are you one of the few elites that actually like grape nuts?
I still like grape nuts, and Liz and I argue about it. I think like they're great. She's like, oh, mix them with another cereal, or you can soak them, and they need to soak for a little while. I like them when they're not soaked, and I just pretend I'm eating aquarium gravel. Or
we're friends. I think we need to reevaluate our friendship.
No. Our friendship is strong, and grape nuts are delicious.
Grape nuts are awful.
I've said before, I like grape nuts as well, and I think that they are kind of in that Cracklin' Oat Bran family of like cereal that's it's more subtle.
What's grape nuts? Heck
yeah, gravel.
Grape nuts are great.
It's like a really gravel. What is grape nuts? That's a great question. This is Liz and I actually went on a deep dive trying to figure out what grape nuts are, and the back of the box was wild. I'll also send this to the chat. It was like, oh, in 1934, Kellogg himself like baked up a slab of grains and husks and then broke them up. And that's how we got grape nuts. And we're reading this and we're like, at no point does this really tell us what it is. Or like, why did he wake up one day and then like break up a slab? I'm not doing this justice, but yeah.
So what in general, so everyone could check that out.
Yeah.
That sounds hilarious.
I mean, you know.
Pock Havoc says edible ground up cardboard.
Definitely.
Oh my god.
Definitely the cardboard. That definitely sounds like the strangest thing John Harvey Kellogg ever did, and don't you dare Google that to contradict me. I'm not gonna tell you what I mean by that.
Silence as we all Google. Moment of silence. Yeah.
Like John Harvey Kellogg.
I'm not looking it up. Freak?
John Harvey Kellogg murder. No, I don't.
well, no, but well, I mean, it's probably Will Keith Het Kellogg. He was the brother that Moore was over the like cereal and stuff. But yeah, they're it's an interesting read.
I got there, and I'm not gonna say it out loud. We can look this up later. No.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Well, back to Grape Nuts.
Yeah.
Wait, if there's a no, we do have a button for that.
Fucking no!
Oh, nice. I like that we have the ender as well.
That's great. I love that.
Fucking no indeed.
I mean, it had to go with...
Fucking yeah!
Yay! And then we have a friend in our wrestling group, John Bennett, who just makes like random noises every now and then. So now we have
fucking God. What?
Just him going yeah, mixed with you.
Fucking God. The wonders of
we technology. Have problems. I'm addicted to the soundboard and making sound.
I'm gonna clips. Need you to fuck off, sir.
Soundboards are fun. What?
Okay, that's a new one. I'm adding my favorites list too.
Soundboards are fun. What's not to like?
Knew you would like that if one, Aki.
It's great.
If I had a soundboard, I'd use a soundboard.
Oh my God, there's another new one.
That old folder almost killed me. Jesus Lord.
I'm not going to explain that one. I'll just let everyone simmer on that one.
Just assume.
Yeah, you can all just wonder what the butthole folder is.
I don't want to know.
I don't want to wonder that.
Is that a
wonder.
Person? Is that a person? Is that what he's known for?
I mean, Jacob, sure.
The folding him?
That was Matt again, though.
So. I know. I don't think he caught my joke.
I didn't.
It's okay.
I disassociated
I'm looking with at grape nuts. Butthole,
so I don't know. Yeah, so apparently the reason they're called grape nuts is because they're grape-like clusters of nut-sized pieces. And it's like, I don't know, man. Anyway, I thought that was wild. They're
nuts to be like grape clusters?
So are they grapes?
They're not. They're not grapes or nuts. So that's
they're
the
not
question.
Even the size
like,
of
why
grapes.
Are they? Yeah, and they're not the they're size not of nuts either. I don't care what that blurb says.
Yeah.
Nuts are not
a batter that came out of the oven as a rigid sheet. Dude, that doesn't sound like something you would want to eat.
I'm reading this and I'm like, this is like the back of a Dr. Bronner's soap thing to me. Like, we're going to start talking about spirituality or something.
you should look up how Fritos are made. Like, it's a similar story.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm learning way too much today.
Fritos are like scraping the bottom of a frying pan, essentially.
Ooh.
It's used to make like other things.
I mean, if that frying pan is full of melted cheese, I'm into it.
Hell yeah. Fritos are great, by the way. That reminds me, I have a bag of chili cheese Fritos I bought one day with the intention of eating them.
Yo.
But I just got too busy.
Don't let life get away from you, man.
Don't let the chili cheese Fritos get away from you.
That crackling oat stuff looks fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's good.
It tastes better than it looks.
It's how you can put it in the
cabinet.
That's
not saying much when it looks that bad.
No, the idea is you buy it and it tastes good, but it looks gross, so it keeps all the plebs from eating your damn food. And it'll always be there when you come back. It's like buying butter pecan ice cream.
But that doesn't look bad. And it tastes fantastic.
But no one likes it.
Butter pecan.
Oh, you like butter pecan?
Oh, yeah.
Regionally, I say pecan. Oh, right. Oh, I'm sorry. You were talking to Aki.
Oh, no. We can totally talk butter pecan. Just I'm surprised that Aki likes it. That means that we've got some commonality in the food market again. We're back, baby.
Yeah,
it's my dad's favorite ice cream.
When I got my tonsils out, that's what I ate.
And the funny part, you said too. You said it's your dad's favorite ice cream.
Yeah, he loved it.
That's
the only ice cream he liked. Yeah,
my dad bought it because originally we didn't like it, so he thought he would buy it and make it so that no one would eat his ice cream. But what he didn't expect is that I would learn to love it.
I'll show you.
I'll eat what I want to eat.
So, Brooke, did you find Cracklin' O'Brien? Did you find your human
I did.
Dog
I
food?
Found it, and I loved it. And, it looks like dog
Target
food.
Has it.
Yeah. I actually finally got it at Target. It was sold out at Safeway for, like, 2 weeks. And I was like, what's going on? Are the old people waking up at, like, 6 a.m. and going to get it, like, before I can wake up? Yeah, and then I finally just gave in and got it at Target. And I know it looks like dog food, Aki, but in the words of Gina Gershon from Showgirls, I love puppy chow.
Wow, what a reference.
I love that movie. That was for Chris, if you couldn't tell by he's my home. He laughed at that one. That movie. I think about that line a lot, too. It's an intrusive thought for me, so I'm glad I could come on tonight to share that. I don't even have a game.
Wait, Elizabeth Berkley Showgirls?
Who's Elizabeth Berkley? Hold on.
What other Showgirls is there?
It was that's the one I just don't never really ever hear people talk about Showgirls. So I wasn't expecting that.
That movie does have some fans. Usually it's folks outside of the realm of like what critics think, which, you know, would be folks like me and Brooke.
Well, you remember like the whole thing thing with that pretty much like tanking her career for a long time, if not ever, which is unfortunate because of the decent movie. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
so the idea was that she came from Saved by the Bell, which was, you know, a teenage friendly Saturday morning show. And then she wanted to step away from that and be like, noticed as an adult actor. So like, I'm in Showgirls now. And it was like, no, we're going to tank that shit.
Very unfortunate. That sucks.
They sell a VIP edition of Showgirls that comes with like a collector's box, a deck of cards, some shot glasses.
Yeah, I need that.
A poster. That doesn't have a stripper pole. That would be amazing. But it does have a poster that you could hang up of a nude Elizabeth Berkley.
Oh.
So, you want boobs on your wall. There you go.
Well, for cinema culture.
Hey, who doesn't want boobs on their wall? It's only the appropriate place.
Y'all know me as liking all these like really fan servicey animes and like games and being like, no, but they're good. But I watched Showgirls like probably like 15 years ago, and I really hyperfixated on it. I thought it was awesome, and I went around telling everybody I usually don't like really sexy stuff or stuff that's awkward to watch with like a partner or friend, but like that this movie was so good that I thought it just like deserved everybody to watch it. I'm now a big Paul Verhoeven fan. This is really early in my movie watching. So yeah, it's funny to think that now I kind of get thought of as a little bit of an anime horn dog on the show, but this is back from like before I was like, yeah, I know you guys, this isn't normally like something I'd like, but it's that good. And then I talk people into watching it. Now I'm like, I don't know, different person now, but.
Sometimes it takes you a while to realize maybe you are that kind of person, you know?
Yeah, maybe. And that movie's kind of anime. I'm going to have to rewatch it to verify that statement, but that movie's crazy.
That's interesting enough of a theory that I would back that up, even though I wouldn't be able to connect that myself.
Group rewatch.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Discord watch of Showgirls. That would be amazing.
I'm down
so awkward.
Of course Aki's down for that.
But how have we not gotten the Show Women sequel yet? I don't understand how that failed. It should have been
like Show Women.
Tip of their tongue. We're Show Women now.
Oh my god. I really need that as a maturing woman myself, you know?
All right, so Brooke, when are you gonna organize that viewing party?
I'm on it. Aki's over here PayPaling me $50. Thank you. They'll never know. This is my idea.
No comments?
Showgirls.
Who's ready for Showgirls?
Thimber is asking a question, slightly off topic, but we're a gaming podcast, so let's act like it for a little bit. Is it worth buying a game on sale which is said to be abandoned? What game?
Abandoned?
What is the game?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Abandoned as in like it needs like patches and stuff, but they just kind of ignored it and it's kind of
just because a game is abandoned doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah, like
it just so happens a lot of bad games are abandoned.
Is it an online focused game? That's the question.
Yeah, I feel like that is the most important part of their question. Like, are we talking like just a single player game that needs some patches? Is it an MMO? Is it just generally online? Because there's a lot of, like you said, like there's games that go to early access and never come out of it and are actually still decent.
I may, when I think abandoned, I think like abandonware, like, you know, you just go and download it. Which, by the way, as a 41-year-old man, I definitely just downloaded Mario Teaches Typing.
Nice.
That's awesome.
One and two.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Old Mavis speaking over here.
If I'm going to learn how to type, I'm going to learn how to type. I'm going to learn how to do it right. Also, yes, I was a Mavis Beacon kid. That's why
I'm a Mavis Beacon girly.
Hell yeah.
I'm a Beacon girl in a Beacon world.
I only ever had 1 year of typing with Mavis Beacon. Like, I got into typing in school right at the tail end of typewriters.
Ooh. Oh,
nice. Remember those things, kids?
Oh, I remember, because that's what happened to me, too. And the first part about that is in grade school, if you had to do typing stuff, you could always like hit backspace with computers and like, well, I'll get it right. And as long as you're fast enough, it's like they'll never know. The typewriters, all your mistakes were there and you could never erase them.
No, I had a correction ribbon typewriter that had a little whiteout
strip along with it. Damn, you had a luxury typewriter. Shit.
Yeah, and when you would hit backspace, it would remember which key you hit and it would just double hit the whiteout strip and cover up the letter.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I used to do that thing. Whoa. Fun fact about that, like, I learned how to type because I cheated in typing class. And it's amazing how that played out, because I'm sure I didn't intend for that to be the case. Teacher would eye us like a hawk while we were on our typewriters, have to use the home row keys, blah, blah, blah. And I was particularly slow about it, but if she ever got called out of the room or got distracted, I went two-finger mode and started mashing the keys. And of course, in order to do it as quickly as possible, you have to remember where the letters are so you can just blitz them with your two fingers. So then out of nowhere, I just became capable of typing. I didn't expect it. So it was like the perfect crime that also taught me.
That's amazing. Like, I love this story.
That's why you're all right, Brooke.
In our typing class, if you were caught looking down at your hands, they would put like a cardboard tray over your hands so you couldn't look at the keyboard.
Wow.
And I'm lucky because if people watch the video of this or the stream, you know I kind of have squinty eyes. So I just squinted a little more and looked down at my hands while I typed, and no one knew a fucking thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I just got squinty eyes. I liked typing, so it was a fun activity.
I eventually picked up typing.
I think it's not about not liking it so much as wanting to type the way you want and school saying you're not allowed to do that. You type the way we tell you to.
I type the way Maven Speaking tells me to.
Well, you're going to type how Mario teaches you soon.
It's pretty similar, believe it or not.
Mamma mia, I do not hear the typing.
I had the original Mario Teaches Typing as a kid, so I remember that one. But the second one, which was on CD-ROM, also featured a hidden rap song if you put the CD in your CD player.
Really?
Yeah, I'll post it in the Discord because I always love to tell.
Was it any good?
Learn that from Rob.
Yes, it is
very good. It's very.
Is it about the game?
Kind of, yeah.
Or is it like an actual like rap song?
It's called "Practice Makes Perfect." Mario Teaches Typing Rap by Legacy X.
Okay, we're gonna have to play that at the end of the show.
I'm dropping it in Discord now for you. I'm just putting it in the planning thing so you can just hit everybody with it at some point.
That works.
There you go. It's very 1992. I guess it's either from the first game or the second game, but it's the CD-ROM version, I think, of the first game, now that I think about it. But I only had the you know, just disc version of it. Or not disc, floppy, you know, floppy disc version.
Don't copy that floppy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, now that we're talking about games, should we get to reviews? We've been chatting for quite a bit.
I came in and derailed it all, so you're welcome.
That was great.
Have any of you played Last Oasis, Thimber is asking? The hell's Last Oasis?
Last Oasis?
Oh, wait, is that Beyond Oasis? Is that desert MMO where it's like a little, it kind of has a post-apocalyptic feel. Hold up, I'm going to look this up.
I think so. It's an Xbox game preview. So I'm guessing that's the game.
Yeah, I played this on...
abandoned.
Okay, yeah, I played this for PC, and I had a good time, but I think this was like 2020, so this is what I'm thinking it is.
Well, it's on sale, so, I mean, if you got 10 bucks to spare, better than 30, so...
True.
If you're into survival games, and I figure it's worth a go for 10 bucks...
Yeah, this is the same game I was thinking of. I did really like the world and like the engines and stuff. I thought it was cool, so I will say that. I think it's a cool game.
Oh, Brooke, 989. What's your verdict?
I don't know. I guess try it. I will be with y'all until 7 p.m. when I will be leaving to go to my late diagnosed adults with autism meeting. So wish me luck.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need luck. You're going to crush it.
Thank you. I'm going with my friend Marissa, so she's listening. See you soon, Marissa.
Also, for the record, if you feel inclined to share what those are all about, I'd be interested in hearing.
Oh, for sure. I will. I'll shoot you a message later tonight. Of course. That'd be awesome. Okay. Yeah, we'll do. Just had to out myself really quick before the show begins. So.
the show began 40 minutes ago.
No! Oh.
Should we get to reviews?
Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is Baccaroo, developed by Good Feel, published by Spike Chunsoft, released September 3rd on Switch and Steam for $39.99. Baccaroo's adventure begins in this Japan-esque wild action game. Chris, what is Baccaroo?
Okay, so Baccaroo is the answer to a very small pocket of gamers' prayers. So if you go all the way back with action, kind of cartoony action games styled after largely historical, maybe specifically Edo era Japan, you may have gotten into the Goemon series. Perhaps through the Super Nintendo with Legend of the Mystical Ninja, or the N64 with Mystical Ninja starring Goemon, which they Americanized his name, the main character's name, to Kid Ying for the SNES version, and Dr. Yang is his partner, and then for their actual names are Goemon and Ibisumaru. But yeah, very charming, cartoony kind of games published by Konami, and then, in a possibly the earliest move of gamers being thoroughly betrayed by Konami, they took them away and stopped publishing them over here in the N64 era. So us Goemon fans, we were ahead of the curve on being wary of Konami. But which, by the way, I shouldn't even be saying that. They just released that new Castlevania thing today, and I'm like, oh my god, finally, Order of Ecclesia.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so happy with them right now, actually.
Yeah, but we'll be talking about that next week.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, I didn't even... Well, never mind. Yeah, talk about that next week. So, here's the thing, though. Goemon is double important when we talk about Baccaroo. For one, obviously, the game is kind of fashioned after the old Mystical Ninja. There's a great reason for that, though. It's because Etsunobu Ibisu, who is the creator of Goemon, the series, the main creator of him, it was like a passion project of his. In fact, he is the Ibisumaru of that series. He was inserted into the game as the comic relief character Ibisumaru. So this is, the Ibisumaru himself founded Good Feel Games. And so this is essentially one of those kind of games like when Bloodstained took over for Castlevania because the actual Castlevania guy was, heading it. Or I guess kind of like a Yuden Chronicles. But yeah, maybe not so much. But yeah, this is actually a spiritual successor to Mystical Ninja or Goemon. as much as you can get, even though the characters aren't here because they're owned by Konami and only appear in, you know, the odd Bomberman cameos. This is still like a very cartoony, fun, you know, action games with, you know, peppered with humor and real references to old timey Japan that we'll get to in just a second. And yeah, it was actually made by the guy who made the original. So yeah, very excited about this one as a longtime fan since the actual 90s of the Goemon series. Bakaru follows the adventure of a tanuki named Bakaru, who has the ability to transform into other things, like you do. And he's on a mission with a little doll-sized girl named Sun, who is warning him about the threat of some big bad guy whose name I've already forgotten. Which is okay. We need not know his name. The story plays out that, you know, Bakaru, as a kind of tanuki ninja, essentially, is sent out with his taiko sticks. Those are sticks for beating a large drum. I'm sure you rhythm game fans know exactly what I'm talking about. Gets to go out into the world and beat up enemies, collect collectibles, and, you know, get through stages all around a world map. So that's kind of what we're dealing with here. So the interesting thing about this game, like, it's a third person thing where you run around. The stages are kind of like a linear version of non-linear. That is to say, if you think like Kirby Forgotten Worlds or I guess that's a good one. Like a modern, like, you can run around the stages, but to get to the next part of the stage, you have to do something else. So it's not just totally, you can just run around the stage freely. The stages are broken up into segments, but those segments you're free to run around in. So if that makes sense. By default, with the controls, you actually control the left and right hands of the character. So while you're running around and jumping into enemies and stuff, like, the left shoulder bumper does the left stick and the right does the right stick. And so you can chain together combos with certain left-right controller movements, or you can slap enemies with them both at once if you like. There's also an alternate control scheme where they do put those on the X and Y buttons, and then they put other functions to the shoulder buttons if you find that control scheme a little weird. I actually quite like it, so I'm fine with that. But yeah, you basically beat up these cute little enemies. This game definitely falls under the category of what I like to call too cute to kill. It's where every enemy is an adorable little thing that you just want to befriend, but in fact, your mission is to murder them and collect coins, yen, actually, and little other items, including one that, I think they're just called... Is it called like Bakaru Spirit or something like that? There's some name for it, but it's a collectible energy that is represented by a fan on the lower right corner of the screen. And when that fills up, then Bakaru can do some of his like special transformations. And while you're in a transformed state, that meter will start going down. The very first one he learns is how to turn into a doll-sized person like his friend Sun. And that allows him to go into little tunnels. It also allows you to jump float. That is to say, you just kind of hammer on the B button while you're jumping, and, you know, you'll kind of walk on air until you get to some other parts unknown. Speaking of parts unknown, the stages are, like I said, they're a little linear. They're semi-linear, I guess you could call them. But they also have a lot of secret areas. Using like your special powers that you develop throughout the stages, you can go back and revisit stages and kind of explore and find more things. The two main things that you can find are going to be, you do have to find like these colored lamps that you then beat up in order to cause the door to open. But then there's, two other kinds of collectibles throughout the stages that you can collect. One of them are just trinkets. They're just like little gacha balls with like trinkets inside. All you have to do is just bust the ball if you can find them, and then you get the trinket, and then, you know, they just kind of sit in a trophy room as far as that goes. The other is a little more interesting. There's a little character who, of course, he's dressed up. He's like another little tiny character, like a doll sized person, but he's dressed up in this hat and raincoat in a sense that when he's faced away from you, he looks like a little pile of poo. and then when you get closer, he's actually a person just dressed up for the weather. And his name is Scoop. His whole thing is that he has the scoop on special information that you're going to want to know that may help you through life. These facts that he gives you are actually just literally useless trivia. I'm going to present two examples that I really like. And like I said, you just collect this trivia, and then he leaves behind a book where you can reread the trivia if you want to. But of course, yeah, like I said, it's just a collectible to get at the end of a stage if you want it. There's one that's number 6, aquatic mail. The world's first underwater mailbox is located in Susumi in Wakayama, Japan. Drop off a letter and it'll actually get delivered. And then there's a little symbol like to press A and it says, I see, which I really love for a reason I can't get into right now because it's too long of a story. Fact number 7, I saved a screenshot of for this episode because it says poo deterrent. It says, here's the fact, spraying liquid lion poo along train tracks can reduce the risk of deer train collisions. So I didn't know
that.
Wow. But now I know that, and you know that, and no one's ever going to unknow that. So, there's your little fact there. Yeah. So, yeah, basically, like I said, it's a little bit of a breeze. You just get through the stages, you collect your collectibles, you solve minor puzzles to get to more enemies. Once you get all the lanterns, you can then leave the stage, move on to the next stage, and then go back and collect stuff if you want. The game is pretty light on drama. In fact, unlike a lot of the Goemon games, I would say it's pretty light on difficulty in general. So this is a good one for platform, perhaps the platform averse, who find the games usually too hard. I have not yet, I've been playing a fair bit and I have yet to, come across anything that was like particularly hard. It's all fun. It's just not that very hard.
Yeah.
You have limited lives and sometimes I forget about that. You have like 5 of them and I've never seen the game over screen in my whole playthrough either. So, yeah, some things will get taken used to and stuff, but this is, like I said, this is a little bit more for the casual set, for difficulty, which is by no means a bad thing. I think that's actually kind of great. The other thing is that sometimes a stage will actually be something completely different, like a racing stage. There is a kart racing stage very early on where you just get to hop into a little robot cart and just race. And then that's the level.
Nice.
You can still find the little findables and stuff. Even I think they're actually just in the race. So like, there's still stuff to like get you going back to it. But yeah, it's just like a little go. Well, Goemon and Ebisumaru appeared in a Game Boy Advance kart racing game. So called Konami Crazy Racers or YY Racers if you're Japanese. Which, if you are, you don't need to hear me talking about this game. Because they've had it for a year already.
Jeez.
Yeah, I almost imported it, actually, because I didn't think it was coming to the U.S. That's how hype I was about this. So, yeah, the only thing I can say about this game, and you can all say it with me, it suffers from a little bit of performance issues on the Switch. It definitely looks like it was designed to run at a 60, you know, FPS or close to, usually hangs around a little under 30. Typically, when you move the camera around, you get a little bit of judder, but again, it's nothing that's going to interfere with the game itself. I especially noticed it in that kart racing section where, you know, it's actually supposed to be, you know, running at a pretty smooth tick. So, you know, this is something, again, when it comes to 3D platformers, unless Nintendo made it, you can almost fully expect it to be in your game. So I'm not even docking any points for it. I'm just letting you know this is not the miracle game that runs flawlessly on the Switch, despite not being a first-party Nintendo game. Having said, that's such a minor complaint on... I keep getting sounds coming up interrupting me. this is like my... This is everything that ever happens to me. Yeah, apart from that, small squabble, great game.
Oh, well, it clocks in at $39.99 If you buy it in the next week or so, you could get it for $35.99. What are your thoughts on the price?
That sounds like there's probably going to be a physical version of it that will be available. I will be purchasing that whenever I can. Until then, I am very happy to report that even at $35, this game is a solid buy it. It is charming, it's fun, it's good to play. It won't stress you out, unless you get easily stressed out by having a little less of an FPS than you were expecting, which I do know that does cause some heart attacks in some gamers.
Yeah.
If you're chill enough to get beyond that, this is a great little thing to dig into. And again, I fully endorse anything made by, you know, Ibisu and, you know, the Goodfeel people. They work with Nintendo. They've made some like really good, like fun Nintendo games that you should look up their resume sometime. I think it's like Yoshi's Crafted World, Epic Yarn, Kirby's Epic Yarn, I should say. They just
did Peach's Showtime or Princess Peach Showtime.
Yeah, exactly. So these are folks that know how to make a very fun video game, and this is them with no, you know, input from Nintendo, just doing what they want to do. So on principle, I support buying this game. So I'm telling you, please go out and get it.
Very cool. And if you're on the fence, there's a demo on the Switch store, so check it out.
There you go.
All right, next game is Overboss, developed by Brotherwise Games, Blanket Games, and Storm Trident, published by Forever Entertainment and Goblins Publishing. A lot of people involved in this one. Released August 15th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Become a villain in this retro-inspired board game. Draft terrain tiles, recruit monsters, build your dungeon, and become the overboss. Purnell, how is it being the overboss?
It's adequate.
Adequate. All right. $15. What's your verdict? No.
No. Full stop. Overboss is a pretty light, if you want it to be, but medium if you want to get deeper into it, board game. The idea of it is, as Joe said in his lead up, is you are a overworld boss monster in a video game inspired world, and your goal is to become the best of the best. And to do so, you are not moving into a world that already exists. Rather, you are crafting your domain using drafting of tiles and creatures with which to populate those tiles to generate and create the best overworld possible that suits your particular fancy. Gameplay is fairly straightforward. You have a board that can range between a 3x4 grid or a 4x4 grid. And on your turn, you get the option of choosing from one of four combinations of tile and creature. When you get a tile, you place it onto your board, wherever you want. And then if you have a spot available to place the monster that you draft, you are required to also place the monster. And if that was all you were doing, well, this wouldn't be much of a game now, would it? However, the thing that makes this particularly heady is that each of those tiles and each of those monsters scores a little bit differently from each other. So there are about, I'm going to get this number wrong, so forgive me already. It's about 9 or so tile types in this game. And each tile type has a different way of which it scores. Each game itself, however, will only have 5 tile types in it. So you'll never have every tile available, and depending on which ones are available in your play session, that will adjust the way of which you go about trying to score points. Again, example, there might be a tile where you're tasked with making it border tiles of another type. Typically the cave. Caves need to be bordering mountains to score their maximum number of points that they'll give you. Whereas forests will score you more points based on how many forest tiles you just have on the board. Doesn't particularly matter where you put them. They just happen to go on the board. And then there's a bunch of different tile types that have their own gimmicks. Some tiles won't even let you put monsters on them. They just have a gimmick of when they're on the board, they score points based on how many different terrains are adjacent to them. So, monsters are worth a point, generally. You can put them, again, wherever you want, but monsters have a preferred habitat or terrain in which they would like to thrive. And if you put the monster on this preferred terrain type, it's actually worth more points. So you want to put monsters where they belong. In addition to that, if you can get the same type of monster in an either horizontal or vertical row, you'll get more points based on how many of them you get in sequence. So in some respects, you're kind of playing like two layers of board game in one. You have the terrain placement and the monster placement, and you'll find yourself trying to figure out, okay, what's the best way to get this guy on the board if I want to get the points for this, but also the terrain bonuses associated with them. Due to the fact that when you draw a tile, having to take a monster with it and having to put it on the board, things can get a little annoying, though, when you get a situation where you draft a tile that comes with a monster that isn't suited for that location. You might be asking yourself, how in the hell am I supposed to get this guy where I want him to go? Well, there is another item that can be drawn alongside the terrain called a portal. And portals, when you draft them, just sit in your inventory where your residence would go. And you can use those whenever you want. It's a one use per portal to switch two monsters on the board. So you can kind of rearrange them however you would like and get them in their proper positionings and such. So for the most part, that is the game. At the end of the game, you'll score points based on how well you did. But then you get into the layers, both in the game that are video game exclusive and also layers that are specific to the board game that were carried over to the video. For example, the actual overboss that you have, or Overlord, if you remember what it was before the Kickstarter got its name shut down and changed. But each of the overbosses in the game have a different ability, both passive and also one-time use that can affect how you play the game. For example, there might be a character that will swap out every single tile that's in the market with new tiles. So if you just don't like what's out there for you and you really need a specific type of tile, use that ability, and now you might luck out and get a better tile to suit your fancy. You might get another character that makes it so that every monster that's in its proper habitat is worth an additional 1 point, so further incentivizing you to get those monsters in their proper homes. And there's about 10 or so of them in the game. And one thing that I thought was pretty cool about this video game is that they included all the Kickstarter-exclusive content from the board game, being the unique overboss monster, and oh, there it is! Oh, shit! And the unique terrain tiles too that were exclusive to the Kickstarter, were originally with the Kickstarter.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I do think it's pretty nice. One thing I found was interesting about this game, though, was that due to the fact that the board game itself is, I mean, for the most part, you can play multiplayer by using the online or local. But when you do that, you're going to have like competing for the job marketplace or whatnot. But if you're playing by yourself, you're not actually playing against an AI opponent, which I thought was pretty interesting. What they decided to do instead was do two things. One, they gave you a sort of solo mode where you can just kind of play and go for high scores based on whatever terrain layout you decide to select, whether you want to play with the 3x4 or the 4x4 grid. Basically, just a casual sit down and play the game. But they also created what's sort of like a campaign mode where you have a series of stages you're supposed to get through. And depending on the difficulty you select, it determines how many hearts you get. Clearly inspired by Zelda, because again, this game was definitely inspired by a clear influence. And I love it for that. But you have a number of hearts depending on your difficulty. And each level, the game will set you up with a series of challenges. It'll put you on a board where it will set up terrain for you. Sometimes it'll let you choose your overboss, sometimes it won't. And it will tell you two conditions you want to meet to try to get a check mark or a successful marker on your maps, you know, results screen, and also a certain high score. So you'll see what those that they want to offer you as far as goals are concerned, and then do your best to utilize the things that you have a choice of to meet or exceed those goals. And if you manage to fail them or don't complete an objective, you will lose a heart and hopefully get it on your next time, because you can always retry the stage until you get at least two out of the three requested goals, which will then allow you to move forward to the next stage. The thing about this game is, I guess I'm going to let it be known immediately because it just needs to be said, a little bias on my part. I did kickstart the original game, so I'm already coming to this as a person who liked the board game, obviously. But with that said, I actually like the video game version of it, too. It's not too hefty, but if you want it to become hefty, there's even one other component I didn't talk too much about, because generally I avoid it, because I'm like, I don't need it too much. But there are special cards that will give you manipulation abilities, but you can only activate those cards by performing tile placement that fulfills specific shapes or patterns. And once you've done that, you trigger the effect and it allows you to utilize it to do some pretty wild things on your board, like swap tiles with the monster still on them, which is more powerful than most of the actual abilities you get from the boss monsters. So, but it also adds that one extra layer of complexity with how do I place my tiles, what tiles do I draft, et cetera, et cetera. So, but with all that said, I like this game a lot. I think Overboss is a lot of fun. It's got weight for all classes. Well, except for the heavy guys, but if you're playing a heavy board game, you probably don't want it digitally in most cases. You want to move those pips. But this game is a lot of fun. I think they did good with the music. It's not too engrossing. It doesn't pull you out of the action. It still allows you to zen out and focus on your decisions while also still being appealing to the ear. Graphically, I think it does a great job of moving the video game inspired board game art to an actual video game. I like watching the little bits of animation the boss monsters get. And frankly, I'm just pleased by the product as a whole.
No, it clocks in at $15. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say it's an honest to goodness buy it. I mean, the physical game was like 40 or 50. I mean, you're getting the digital game here and you get all the fun from that. So if you want to play the game without all the meeple pushing, this is a discount and it's a good one at that.
Nice. All right. Next up, Deathbound, developed by Trial Forge Studio, published by Tate Multimedia, released August 8th on Series X and S, PS5 and PC for $29.99. Deathbound is a one-of-a-kind party-based Souls-like set in a callous world where faith and science clash, dynamically transform between fallen warriors, all with their own unique skill sets, combat styles, and rich history, conquer a brutal reality where life and death were never more conflicted. Aki, what is Deathbound?
Okay, in Deathbound, you play as character. I say that because, as it says, it's a party one, but it's not party-based as in you have co-op people joining your game like lots of these do. Instead, your character is a party in and of themselves. In this world, it is a post-apocalyptic future, because you can still see, you know, old skyscrapers that have fallen into disrepair and everything, but society has partially reverted back to like medieval times, and it has basically been split between this group of people who worship the goddess of death and believe that she's the one true goddess and that's the answer to everything, and you have everyone the fuck else, because these people are batshit insane. And they're batshit insane because they believe anyone who doesn't believe as they do and follows everything extremely strictly deserves to, as their goddess is named after, die. Yay. So yeah. So the start of this game is outright the believers of the goddess of death attacking as like this gigantic just army of armored knights attacking the people who believe in the goddess of life, who end up, they look like peasants and farmers. And you can guess which side very quickly starts winning. But the side of life doesn't just use the medieval technology. They also have kept some old technology around. So they're doing experiments and so on and so forth, and leash upon the world a bunch of monsters in hopes to stop these bad guys. And very quickly, your character dies because, you know, good for him. He's a douche. He deserved it anyways. And you come back because it's a Souls-type game. And not long after, you find out you're not the only living individual. And this is where the party aspect comes in. You can play up to four different characters that share the same body, basically. So you find corpses of other people and you basically pull their souls into yourself. And there's more than four of them that you can find by a pretty significant amount, actually. But you can equip up to four of them at the same time. And each one of them has their own different sets of weapons and movement styles and stuff. For instance, obviously the guy you start off with, he's a knight. He has a nice big fuck-off-sized sword and a shield. The first person that I found, which is probably the first one you can find, after that is a more or less an assassin woman. She uses a short sword and a crossbow. And each one of these individuals have their own level up tree. So they all get their own special abilities and upgrades and stuff. And they each have their own health pool. So you don't have, oh, this is just until my character dies. No, it's this character has their health and this character has their health. They share the same body, but they're completely separate otherwise. Which is interesting. However, there is a system in this game that really kind of sucks that's related to that, and it's your stamina is directly related to your health.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you get injured, you have less stamina, because your health bar is also your stamina bar. So the more fucked up you are, the more fucked you are, just all around. Ouch. Yeah, it's bad. And there's one other really sad part of this. You have those four different characters. They all have their own health pools. If any of them hit zero, it is game over. Yeah, which kind of sucks.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, I would have preferred, you know, if all four of them hit zero, then it's game over. But no, if any of them hit zero, it's game over. And that kind of sucks. But yeah, it's character movement is pretty slow, like you would expect out of a Souls game, original one. You know, everyone tends to be pretty heavy in this. However, the combat's pretty surprisingly fluid for how slow they tend to move outside of combat. And yeah, I like the combat. It doesn't seem like it's as hard as if anyone plays Soulsborne games. It's not as hard as Dark Souls at all. It is still methodical in how you play. So you go in, you take a hit or two, and then you jump out. Exactly what you'd expect of the Dark Souls games. But it's a lot easier. Things die a bit quicker. You can take a little bit of damage before you die. Not a lot, but you can take some. Though you really don't want to take any. And yeah, there's, you know, your beginning character, he has the ability to block as well as parry. And you're taught very quickly, you really want to use these things. Because otherwise you're dead. And I think many of the characters have a type of block. But yeah, it's pretty good. I thoroughly enjoyed the amount of time I put into it. I didn't get a whole ton of it in there because of the game I'm reviewing on Thursday. But I have surprisingly enjoyed this a lot. Once I learned that that each one of them had their own health pool and that was attached to stamina, and if any of them died, it was game over, I really didn't think I was going to like it. But you don't get hit super, super often if you play fairly defensively, which is how I tend to play these games. So it's been pretty fun for me. I think anyone who's used to, let me run in and attack, 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 they're not going to enjoy this because they're going to get screwed so badly. But everyone else, I think, will have probably a pretty generally okay time with this game.
Ooh, well, it's $30. What are your thoughts?
I think it's totally worth it. I think you're going to get probably that many hours, maybe more, out of it. So, yeah, go for it, folks.
Cool, sounds good. All right, up next, House of Golf 2, developed and published by Starlight Games, released August 16th. Series X and S, PS5, PC for $29.99. House of Golf 2 delivers an engaging multiplayer golf experience with over 100 unique holes to conquer. You gather up to four players for lively couch play sessions, showcasing your skills with jaw-dropping shots. Compete in live tournaments for exciting rewards. Leave your mark on the world of golf. Pernell, you and I played this. What did you previewed this a little bit ago. What are your thoughts on this game?
I'll be honest with you. My thoughts on it haven't particularly changed. I still believe the game is pretty solid. There are a number of cool courses in there, though, believe it or not, something I don't know how I didn't realize in the previous time of it, but in recent now I've actually tried to get decent scores. They actually do have a real mulligan option in the game, which I appreciate wholeheartedly. The mulligan in this game, when you decide to use it, will reduce some of your points, but let you redo the shot. So overall, what it ends up doing for you is it helps you get the pars or trophies for being even further below par than the basic. But if you're trying to hit the leaderboards for the points, that's where you'll falter. But if you're the type that just wants to get through and unlock different courses and see what there is to offer, and also just redo a really crappy shot, because you'll have a bunch of those, then it's good to have a mulligan option. I do believe the courses are all fun in their own way. I will believe one thing that I still seem to be failing at, if you got better at it, let me know, because I don't know why I'm not. But I'm always using the camera to bring the get a bird's eye view of where the ball is, where it is currently at on the course. But I have not found the means to just straight up go all around the course. I'm sure it's in there, just for some reason I haven't figured out what it is that does it. You know what I'm talking about?
To just have a free look around the course. I know there's a way to do it. I did it before. I can't recall the exact way to do it off the top of my head.
Yeah,
I was able to like browse around because you have to. The thing that I figured out with this game is if you want to get a good score, you have to make a decision whether you want to go for the collectibles or if you want to go for the hole right away. You can't really do both and get a good score. So if you want to do the collectibles, make that decision at the start of your round. Like, this is going to be a collectible collecting session. And do that, and then play it again and try to get the pars or the birdies or the holes in ones, whatever you can muster. I have a really good time with it, though. I'm amazed at how good the game looks. It is such a gorgeous, stylish game.
Yes,
like, I'm used to cartoony visuals in mini golf games, and this is all realistic looking.
Yeah, but that's what I think is pretty nice. It's a combination of those things, because the graphics are all realistic, but it's still goofy in that you are technically playing in a gigantic house with your ball bouncing off of boxes of cereal and little toy trains and active robots. There's something appealing about that, because with the exception of Neo Turf Masters and Power Golf on the Turbo Graphics back in the day, I was never really big on golf games until, of course, Camelot came in there. So let's Mario-fy this and throw some Motoi Sakuraba on golf games. But before that, I only had the two that I liked. And the exception to that concept was the idea.
Hot Shots is also Motoi Sakuraba in the first game.
Yeah, but I didn't learn that, sadly, until, believe it or not, the PlayStation Vita version of the game. Because that was like, oh, because you know what it was think of it like how N64 was when it came out. N64 had a whopping two games at launch with a third that came up a little ways later. So if you wanted to play games, you pretty much just bought what was there, right? So you learned to eventually like games. I didn't like Pilot Wings until N64 because I realized, wow, this is more fun than I gave it credit for. And buying that Hot Shots. Yeah, I do now. Absolutely. But same with Hot Shots. Like, I just kind of ignored them. And then, bam, this World Invitational came about, and I got to play that. And I was like, this game is a lot more better than I gave it credit for. This is fantastic. But this game hits the mini golf that I like and don't get to see enough of in video golf games. Because when you think about it, most game releases for golf are, even if they do give you wacky stuff like Super Swing did with the, plungers and stuff like that, or Mario Golf does, it's still technically like legitimate. You know, you're on a golf course. Here's your dunes, blah, blah, blah. This is like pure fantasy, wacky golf. Like, again, you're not hitting a sand trap. Your ball's getting stuck in a vat of glue, or it slips on some ink, you know, that kind of thing. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate that level of fantasy and imagination being brought to the hobby, especially the cannons. I'm a big sucker for cannons. Like, I just like those. So the game itself, I believe, is a bona fide solid product. Like, I could recommend this to anybody who likes mini golf, golf, or even just wants that thing that they do where they want to hang out with their friends online and compete for scores. Because I know a couple of people that do stuff like this, like that game called Golf with Your Friends, where I know people who aren't really golfers, but they like playing that as a social activity. This could totally be that game too, I believe.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I wish it had online play. I appreciate that there's live tournaments that you can like compete score wise with other people, but just being local only, at least on console. Like, I know on Steam you could do the share play and have multiplayer that way, but on console you're stuck with local. And I wish there were ways to play online and have
actual. I mean, the one benefit, I will say, for folks who want that, which is a very valid want, don't get me wrong, but I can say for folks that want that, as long as your friends aren't lying assholes, positively, golf is golf, meaning that if you want to play online, you can just join a party, boot up the game, and just choose the same course, and then go through the process of, okay, I'm on the same hole as you, let's see how you do that. Of course, you lose out on watching your friends fumble a good shot, but until they get on, because I'm pretty sure once they're out of whatever early access period they're in, they're going to have online. I can't imagine them not instituting online once all said and done.
But well, I mean, the game is officially out now. It's released.
Oh, God dang it. Well, please, guys, you got to fix that then. No, I thought it was still kind of in the box. No, that needs to get added to it. Then.
It's 1.0. August 16th was the 1.0 release. I don't know if online is something in the cards for the future. It might be a technical issue with the Unreal Engine because of how visually demanding the game is. It might not work online. I don't know. I don't know how that stuff works.
That's a good point. It is unfortunate, though. But
yeah.
I guess it still sticks with what I was saying before then. If you might not be able to watch the shots, but just being in a party chat and doing the tournament, like the levels together at the same time, that's pretty, it's doable, even if it's not perfect.
Yeah, this is one of those games I'm jealous of Steam, that you can just do the share play, invite a friend, and play online, treating it as a local session. I love that about Steam. Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah, Steam is a wonderful beast, and heaven help me the day I get a decent rig and I'm not beholden solely to the Steam deck, because I might just say buy the consoles altogether. I have definitely taken the plunge to PC gaming.
Yeah. Well, House of Golf clocks in at $29.99. What are your thoughts?
I will be honest, even with the online, as a person who primarily plays games by himself anyway, I think this is a buy it.
Hey, I'm leaning more towards a try it. I do love how much is there. I wish it had online. That's the only little thing that's holding me back from giving it an all-out buy it. I'll give it a highly recommended try it. If it were $10 cheaper, it'd be a buy it. But $30 is a little much for golf, but you know, technically it's impressive, visually it's impressive. So I highly recommend try it at least.
I mean, not to change your score or nothing, but I will say
I'll change my score by the cost of
all right. I'm not even going Damn, I need to get to the bait club quick.
No, what was your reasoning?
I was just going to say that, yeah, in a general sense, I could see where you'd say, you know, $30 is a bit much without the online, but I mean, a lot of golf games that we were buying and people still buy, they generally run like 50 to 60 even now, which shocks me. And this game does have a lot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, on one hand, you might say, well, they have online, yeah, but they're 60 or 70 or 50. So for 30, I mean, it's not too bad if it's just on like, you know, single player, but you're getting all the holes in the gameplay. So
that's fair. It's still worth playing either way.
Mm-hmm. Now, right. 60.
Next game to talk about, Kamikaze Last Planes, developed by Inky Dreams, published by Inky Dreams and Yabai.Games, released August 30th on Switch and Steam for $19.99. Fly and fall for powerful last planes, discover a handcrafted anime visual novel with story-driven arcade shoot-em-up gameplay. Take part in a romantic story with drama and comedic elements set in a steampunk kingdom filled with magic and torn by a brutal war. Decide the fate of your country and heart. Chris, what is going on in Kamikaze Last Planes?
Well, when I was asked, do you want to play a shmup that's actually a dating sim where you date the planes? I was like, yes, more than anything. So was excited to get into this one. I am not a, you know, I'm not a visual novel expert like Brooke, so, you know, I'll do my best. But I will say my very favorite visual novel of all time incorporated another type of gameplay in it, and that was old school RPG, and that's The Longest 5 Minutes, which I have, it's always a top 10 game for me, but at one point it was my favorite Switch game of the entire library, so... just letting you know, I took that game very, very seriously for a while. So I like when a drawn out, you know, actually like written visual novel contains elements of gameplay from another genre. And sure enough, Kamikaze Last Planes is a step further in terms of like how it incorporates the other genre. So the game is divided into book sections and you know, the actual VN sections, and then an actual shmup. It's as simple as that. Honestly, you could stop listening right now and just go ahead and get it if that sounds appealing to you, because that is exactly what it is. It does what it says on the tin, which I like. The story follows Walter, a presumably male pilot whom you never see, but is you. You get to make all the decisions for Walter, and of course, the decisions will decide how the story goes, leading up to multiple endings, with one, you know, with basically the other characters involved are two last planes. Now, basically what a last plane is, it's if you, like me, played a lot of Azure Break Crosswaves or something like that, I can't remember anymore, but the game where it's girls who are also battleships, but they are definitely also girls. That's kind of how this goes. So you meet your first last plane, who is assigned to you, who is her name is Alba Tross, which is pretty great. Yeah. Oh, actually Trosse, because
the accented E.
Yeah, the accented E. Damn it. I'm trying to be cool and like remove this bot from the chat, but I had to put it in mod view and then you did it. Anyway. Hooray Twitch. It's getting even worse with bots. It is. But yeah, Alba Trosse comes into your life, and you basically, like I said, she is a partner, but you know, you basically have to have like this very close relationship with her for business purposes, the business of shooting down all of the enemy planes, because she turns into one and has a weapon called simply light, which basically, I guess, you know, creates, for instance, infinite ammo. You know, they basically they lure away the elements of shmups, and I really appreciate that. I think that's very fun. Later on, you meet Hannah Brannigan, who is a different last plane. And you know what? I'm not even going to tell you about the plot because you kind of know how this goes. It, like I said, you're making decisions that are going to favor one or the other, or maybe neither, maybe both. The plot is well written. Definitely feels like a visual novel. I don't know what you would call this. I'm going to say it's animated because all of the characters have like standing animations, but they don't have like full voice acting, certain lines will get a read, or like there'll be a different kind of reaction. Like she'll say something else and then it'll but it doesn't really correspond with what she's actually saying. Like it'll be a surprise or something like that. And like the voice acting is in Japanese. There's no English voice acting, so it's not really going to interfere with anything as far as that goes. And like I said, they just have this kind of animation sequence that they go through while they're passively, you know, talking and doing the novel and stuff. Every scene, you know, depending again on your choices and things like that, you can unlock different still images, usually slightly naughty. But this is not an After Dark game, just letting you know. it is definitely like on the kind of, you know, I don't know what you would call it. They say it features ecchi visuals. I don't even fully know what that means. I just know that it's like there's not like actual real nudity or anything like that. There's no like real adult content, but it does. Yeah. It does push it as close to that as possible without going over. So it's titillating, if you will, to borrow a word that I know Purnell likes to use. And yeah, but it's charming ultimately. And as you proceed in the game, you find out it's not like Raptor Boyfriend or I Had a Full Boyfriend, where they're making fun of visual novel dating games by making you date something weird, like the just announced today Date Everything game, where you just where every single object in the world becomes a dateable character. It's not like that. It actually starts off this kind of sweet little you know, flirty story, and then it kind of takes a bit of an emotional turn where you're kind of more involved in like in the lives of these people rather than whether they're going to get together at the end of the game. Of course, that's always going to be in the back of your mind if you're, you know, really interested in that. Hard not to get like that when you play games like this. But anyway, that's the visual novel side. So the other side of that is the shmup side. Like I said, these girls do transform into shmup planes. They do, I would say a much more fancy version of Beaker Reloaded, in that they tell you kind of what a shmup is. Now here's the thing that I do want to like kind of make clear about this. So you would think, okay, it's a visual novel. It's actually written like a visual novel. It's got a real emotional story. You know, very nice animation and, you know, collectible naughty pictures. But how does it hold up as a shmup, right? Like, the longest 5 minutes, its biggest thing that people kept talking about is, like, it's not a real RPG. It's too easy. You can't, you know, your equipment doesn't hold from story segment to story segment. You know, things like that. No, this one's actually a serious shmup. Here's the thing. You have four difficulty levels you can choose from. I decided to check it out on normal mode because it said that's what the devs intended. I was like, cool. It doesn't quite get into bullet hell territory, but it does get into like pretty challenging territory. I would rank it up there with like some early Gradius levels and things like that. Like, you actually... you know, you have limited lives before you have to start over again, but and you pick up power-ups and like healing items and things like that, you know, items to increase your gun power, a little bit like Darius, but you don't lose that. Well, you do lose that stuff if you get hit, so yeah, I'm gonna call it like Darius in that sense, which is my favorite shmup series, by the way, so don't take that compliment lightly. So, yeah, it does have, like, an element of that. And as you progress through the story, your potential for growth actually becomes bigger. Like, you get more, you can get bigger guns and stuff like that than you could before. Like, you know, your gun level, instead of capping out at 3, maybe, like, 4. Or, you know, and further. And then, yeah, the stages do also contain bosses. And, you know, like story specific things, they will slow down the action after a certain waves of enemies to tell more story. Usually it's, you know, Walter thinking to himself or communicating with the last plane in some way. Like I said, they talk about things that happen, but they don't do it while the gameplay is happening, which is very important. That's a big thing.
God, there are so many games that have like the vertical shmup in the middle of the screen, and on the sides, yes, they'll have story elements and talking happening, and you can't fucking pay attention because everything's happening.
Looking at you, RxN Raiden, which, by the way, got taken off of the eShop, so I bet my card of that's worth $1 million now. But yeah, just chattery like shmups and stuff. And another one, Sign Mora had a lot of that too. And really, Sign Mora is the only other, like, you know, comparable shmup I can think of. It doesn't have a visual novel, but it does have an emotional story that it tells throughout the stages. It's just you don't get to freaking pay attention to it because you're trying to shoot down things. Now, this game actually, as far as I know, it slows down the action or, you know, stops the action to give you story and then you proceed. And that's going to come up in an important element pretty soon. But no, actually, let's talk about it now. So for folks who only, well, I realized I didn't really have much else to say in the thing that I started talking about. Like I said, it's shmups. You go through it, you fight bosses, you power up, and it's really good. It's like lots of bullets and lots of dodging and lots of dialogue that doesn't interrupt all that. Then in the main menu, you could just play the shmup if you want. There is an arcade mode that does away with all dialogue. You can only select Alba until I think Hannah is available, and then you can choose either one of them. Until then, Hannah is just stranger, quote unquote. But yeah, you choose your last plane and just go through the game. You can again choose the four difficulty levels and you know, play it as you like. Oh, yes, that was the point I was going to make finally, and I guess this can work as a final point. If you are a visual novel fan and the idea of having to play through a somewhat challenging shmup intimidates you, don't worry, the devs got your back. This game does have a god mode. You can simply turn on god mode just to get through the story and just to kind of take part in the action, but you know, you don't have to worry about getting hit and dying. You can just get through the shmup part and enjoy at your leisure.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, the game clocks in at $20. What is your verdict on Kamikaze Last Plane?
God, I mean, you know, I would have said that, you know, I really had to kind of, like, temper my expectations because I was like, this sounds like such a funny, fun idea that I really don't want this game to suck. No, it turns out there's effort all over the place here. So, yeah, this is well worth your 20 bones. I'm very happy that this isn't one of those $50 ones, you know?
Yeah, true.
No, it works great as a VN. It works great as a shmup. You could not ask for more, literally, than that. So, yeah, go ahead and pick this one up. You know, and again, I don't know that the content ever gets, like, naughtier than what I saw, but I looked ahead at, like, some other things that talked about this, and, you know, pretty much everybody agrees. Yeah, it's just, like, you know, it's PG-13 at worst. You might see a butt. So, yeah, there you go. It's a buy it.
If people are on the fence about it, there is a demo on Steam that you could check out. And if you play the demo before this Friday, so there's not much time to do this, if you find the secret ending, you can potentially win a free copy of the game.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I didn't look into that very much, but yeah. Yeah, go if you're a...
Yeah, check out the demo. Give it a go.
Expert, I guess. Yeah, see if you can do it.
Cool. All right. One final game to talk about tonight, and it's some DLC for Hellcard, Bruja the Blood Witch, developed by ThinkTrunk, published by Skystone Games and Surefire Games, released August 22nd on Steam for $5.99, DLC for Hellcard. Bruja the Blood Witch threads the needle between light and darkness. She cajoles power from ancient gods and flits away power from their retribution. Saps life force and strength from enemies and pays the price in blood, turns weakness into strength and strength into weakness again. Brunel, what is going on in Hellcard, Bruja the Blood Witch?
Well, this isn't a whole lot to say about this game because it's pretty much DLC regarding a character, but I will say that the character itself is pretty different from the other characters in this game, and I mean that in a good way. So, as you mentioned in your description, they lean heavily on cards that have a risk versus reward sort of vibe. I might be saying that wrong, but I believe it is accurate for it. The character most notably introduces two concepts to come, Grace and Reckoning. Reckoning is a resource that gets built up when you play certain cards. Generally, these cards are pretty powerful for the scope of cards you have access to in this game. Give you an example, might be one where it's a non-upgraded card with a low cost that will allow you to hit a medium range of enemies for 3 damage each, which is pretty good in this game. But if you use that card, you'll get like 5 Reckoning or something. And what Reckoning will do is at the end of every turn that you have it, you'll lose hit points related to that amount of Reckoning that you've generated. So the more powerful cards you use, the more Reckoning you'll build up, more so depleting your health. Grace, however, is another thing you can utilize when you play specific cards that will sort of give you a breather from taking that damage. It's almost like the counterbalance to Reckoning. Less cards give you Reckoning than those that give you... less cards give you Grace than those that give you Reckoning, though. So when you come across a Grace-dealing card, you better cherish that thing. Now, with that said, there are also cards that will benefit you if you have less than a certain threshold of health in the game, too. So it's not all just not all crappiness as far as like just watching your health go down the toilet to imminent death. Just make sure that, you know, you're mindful of what you've got and how your deck is playing. Like, there's some cards that will straight up reduce your Reckoning if your hit points are below a certain threshold, almost like a sort of reprieve from, you know, beating yourself into oblivion. There are also cards in this character's deck that cost blood to play, blood being your hit points. So that's another issue. But a cool thing that I noticed about this character is a couple of cards where if you use it, and I'm trying to remember if it was based on if you kill the enemy or if you don't kill the enemy. Basically, it's like it does like chip damage. But if you manage to defeat the enemy, it will give you healing drops, which will basically give you hit points back. And they cost 0 to actually use. Like, it'll just straight up say, here's a card. It goes right to your hand. Costs nothing. But when you use it, you get a small penance of health back, which can add up depending on how what kind of hand you've built up and how you've curated it. This character also comes with their own artifacts. Artifacts are items that are can be equipped to a character that makes that character unique from other aspects of that character.
Unique.
There we go.
Unique, but the actual classic definition of unique that actually fits.
The actual unique.
Quick shout out. We got to give a quick thanks to Rootbeer, who just subbed for the 56th month. Thank you so much for your support and for being here. Enjoy the kitty cats. Enjoy the emotes. And thank you again, Pernell, as you were saying.
So basically, it's a character that I feel is a good fit for the game. I do realize that this character is, because we had this conversation earlier where I was like, how is this DLC? I mean, I'm already using the character. But What I've come to understand through you is that the character is DLC for use as a main hero, because the way this gameplay style works is that you control one hero and then other players control the other heroes. But if you're not playing in co-op, you'll stumble across heroes as you're journeying into the depths. And in this instance, you can sometimes come across Bruja or the Bruja class, even if you didn't buy the DLC. But with the DLC, the character is selectable in the game proper as a main hero, which also means, I'm not sure, I'm assuming this will also make it exclusive to the DLC, but the unlockable cards exclusive to that class would only be able to be unlocked if you have the character in your profile to do the unlocks for. So that's my take on it. But if there's anything I'm missing there, let me know.
No, but well, let's just run down the list on Steam of what's included in the DLC, because a lot of it is just integrated into the game and it's hard to tell what's what. Okay. There's the new Bruja playable class. There's 106 new cards in the game, 8 new class specific artifacts, 5 new outfits, 20 new voice lines, 9 unlockable emotes, and the class specific location, the Altair.
Okay.
So there's a meaty amount of stuff in there for $6.
And I would say, to be perfectly honest, just to kind of reiterate on what I don't even think I said this on my original review of the game, but I've been playing a lot of board games lately, so forgive me. I feel like this game deserves a lot more credit than it's probably getting, because I never hear anybody bring this game up on anything. And I feel like it deserves a lot of love. It's a sort of like a tower, think of like a central tower defense game, but you can collaborate with two other people to manage the hordes, in that you can sort of collaborate. You can even have your own class and have a team synergy of sorts to be like, okay, well, I have these cards in my hand right now. You may or may next, I don't know how it is in multiplayer, so I don't get to play with people by myself, but you could talk or see what other characters have that are in your party and go, I have this card that will boost everyone's defense, and if I use it, I'll sacrifice my actual attack to let my friends do crazy damage. But I better ask them to make sure they have cards that will do damage if I let them use all their skills or all their AP. It's a good game for inducing conversation in your gaming group, collaborative planning to defeat mobs, and the mobs in this game can get pretty crazy as well. The atmosphere in the game is pretty cool. The decision making in the game is pretty cool. I just think it's good. It's a great roguelike. And I feel like even if you find yourself thinking, well, I don't need to be buying a DLC like that because whatever's free versus what's paid for, I do believe if you are like, if you've not really messed with this game before, but you dig roguelikes, you should buy the game. And then the DLC you can decide on later, though I am going to give the DLC a buy it. But you should at least play the game flat out. It's a good quality product. And I'm looking forward to whatever they do with this game that showed up in the Hall of Books, which is the intro screen where you choose your game from this publisher that you want to play involving aliens or something. But it's apparently coming soon, so I hope that game ends up being pretty good as well. Anyway, buy this. It's fun.
Cool. Works for me. All right, that is it for this episode.
Yeah.
What?
Whoa.
But I'm joking. I was like, you're going to buy it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, first sale.
We have a button for that.
Fucking yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah, there button. Get it.
So I guess we should ask, is it a buy it?
Fucking yeah. Yay.
Wow. AI's taken over.
I suppose. Yeah, the AIs have it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks to the three for being here, hanging out the whole time. Thanks to Brooke for coming on and chilling with us for a little bit and talking about cereal and food and all that other fun jazz. I can't believe we spent like 40 minutes talking about cereal and typing.
I love it.
Oh, I can.
It's classic. Classic.
I absolutely can.
Music this episode. Maybe we should... Practice Makes Perfect, Mario Teaches Typing Rap by Legacy X. I guess I'm playing that. So does anyone have any final words to end the show? Aki found that one.
I think that's the word. I think those are the words. Those may be the words. Also, we can blame Aki.
Do you like that, Aki? Are you happy with that sound effect?
Yeah.
I hope you took that sound bite too, because there's one for you.
Just yeah.
Exactly. That's a sound bite.
Oh man. Let's use one more sound bite to end the episode.
Why are you bugging?
That's perfect.
Time warp, turn into a corpse. I'm filling you with knowledge is the best source. Really making
magnetic clicks. It's the G-Force coming with the resource. Quick like an Audi, or better yet a Porsche. Oops, I think I got busy on the Macintosh. You can't believe it. Wow, geez, you're like, God. Never underestimate the power circuit. I jerked it, berserked it, fool, you know I worked it. Yeah, hold up, wait up, shh, I think I know. Cause I was told by my man Mario, yeah. So I can make these joints, breaking it to the face and making it tight up on the joints. I don't really wanna feel a hot fever, cause you know I got skeezer, grumpy Ebenezer. Looking at the way I make a jam and then I revise. All competition getting hypnotized. Going straight through the freaky eyes, fickle, fickle. Wait until the sweat starts to trickle. Oh no, I think you got a malfunction. Hold up and watch while I do a little something.
Practice, practice, you can do, you can do it. And you can practice, practice, I know.
Started like this, and bustin' like that.